Welcome to the Disability Parenting Podcast, where stories unite, community thrives, and validation is paramount for parents raising children with disabilities. I am your host, Lexi Emery, and I am thrilled to have you here with us today. Today, we are going to be talking with the lovely Danella Pochman. She is a pediatric nurse practitioner and board certified nurse coach. Today, we are going to be chatting all about caregiver burnout, what it is, and what we can do if we get there. Danella, I am so excited to have you here today. Can you just start by telling us a little bit about you and your family?
Yes, Lexi, thank you so much for having me. As you said, I'm an advanced practice nurse. I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner and a board certified nurse coach. And I'm also the founder of Gravity Coaching, where I help caregivers recognize and navigate burnout and overwhelm and really create a life that loves them back. I have been married to my husband for almost 16 years, and we have three kiddos. My daughters, Sophia and Isabel, are both typical kids. And my son, Dylan, is my special guy who was born with a rare genetic condition called SATB2-associated syndrome. We didn't actually get his diagnosis of that until he was about 6 years old. And so we had a lot of uncertainty in our journey, kind of, you know, took some twists and turns. He also has a diagnosis of autism that we received before we knew about his genetic condition. And, you know, our journey has just been our own. And we are, you know, we love him so much. We advocate for him. And it's also, as you know, challenging to have anything kind of different about your kids. He's a happy and social guy, and he's also non-speaking. He uses an AAC device to communicate. And, you know, I think for me, I have always been a caregiver, first as a nurse and then as a mom. And I thought for the longest time, in my work as a nurse, that my purpose was really taking care of children in the hospital. My journey as a nurse and kind of navigating burnout in that regard led me to walk away from my clinical nursing profession. And I really felt like a failure because I wasn't, you know, living my purpose, taking care of kids in the hospital. And then I realized maybe my purpose is just to help whatever children need my care, which in this case is really my own. And at this point, I think it's evolved even beyond that to include advocating for anybody who's really unable to advocate for themselves, like individuals with disabilities, and to empower individuals who have the ability to advocate for themselves to do so, such as nurses and caregivers.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. I love that. And I think that you offer just such a unique perspective, having the professional side and then the personal side with your son, and just caregiving can look so different. It isn't, you know, just in a clinical setting or just, you know, taking care of our kids. It can be a lot of different ways. And so you just have a very well-rounded view of all of this. And I really appreciate you coming on today. And I love to ask all of my guests three questions. So what is your happy place? What is your favorite beverage? And what is your favorite personality trait for yourself?
Yes. So my happy place, my answer might be a little controversial, but I grew up in Southern California, and my happy place is truly anywhere near an ocean. The water just speaks to me, and I just feel so at peace when I'm near it. But I've lived in Colorado for more than half of my life, and we've been here for almost 25 years, and I would say the mountains are definitely becoming a close second. My favorite beverage is hot tea. I drink it all day, every day, year round. Even when it's 100 degrees outside in the summer, my family makes fun of me, but it's my thing. And my favorite personality trait about myself is that, you know, I always try to remember that everyone has a story, that what you see may not reflect what's going on underneath the surface. You know, the person that cuts you off in traffic, they might just be having a really bad day. And instead of just getting angry at their behaviors, right? Or just, we want to just be so frustrated with people sometimes. And for me, it helps me find compassion that they might just be having a hard day. They might not. They might just, maybe they're just a jerk. But if I pretend like they are just really struggling, it helps me find compassion for them, which I think in turn helps me find compassion for myself on those days that feel really hard.
I love that. That is lovely. And yeah, it's kind of twofold. Like, it helps the people who, you know, might be having a hard day to, you know, enter a situation with compassion or empathy, but then it also helps you to like look at life in a different lens and not, you know, just everyone is, you know, grumpy and mean and, you know, all of that. So that's cool. Well, awesome. Well, let's hop right in. Can you start by telling us a bit of more about what burnout is?
Yes, absolutely. So I will just preface it by saying that my journey really began, you know, looking at nurses and their experience of burnout. So I have a little bit more of an academic definition of burnout, but I also just think I'll try to really relate that to the lived experience because that's, I think, really what everybody cares about. And so burnout really fundamentally is the physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion that's caused by prolonged and overwhelming stress. That overwhelming feeling can leave you feeling hopeless and cynical and resentful. So the academic definition that we see in the literature includes emotional exhaustion. This is kind of the entry point or that initial manifestation into the burnout cycle. This really feels, or this looks like feeling depleted of your emotional resources and just feeling like you have nothing left to give. The second part of burnout is where we become a little more cynical and depersonalized. It's really a defense mechanism to try and create some space between ourselves and this overwhelming stress. We become skeptical of everything. We might lose trust in relationships, in the situation, and we're just really starting to feel negative about everything. And then the third piece is this inefficiency or lack of personal achievement. It's really those feelings of ineffectiveness, that we don't have inherent value anymore, that no matter what you do, it's never good enough. You don't have agency. You don't have a sense of control in anything, really. And you just feel helpless or stuck. And I think it's important to point out that, you know, we all experience stress, right? So stress, we feel that anytime our resources we experience our resources less than the demands that are being placed on us. So we just feel like we can't get ahead. Stress can make us feel like we'll feel better once we get everything under control. And so it actually can be a little more motivating. Sometimes it feels really defeating, but that can be more temporary. And we start to motivate to try and get through the situation because we see on the other side that we're going to feel better. Burnout is the result of this chronic stress, and we just feel like we're not enough. We feel empty. We feel exhausted. We feel like there is no light at the end of the tunnel. We are just perpetually in this tunnel, and it feels very defeating. And so it's important to remember that this all happens on a continuum and not necessarily all at once.
I absolutely love that you clarify the difference between stress and burnout. I have never really heard it phrased that way. And I feel like it really helps set the difference for the two because they are really different. And I love when you explained that stress can be kind of motivating, but the difference when you're in burnout is that you don't potentially have that at all. There's just, it's that stuck feeling.
Yeah, it's that feeling like you've experienced this before and nothing seems to work and you're no longer motivated by the stress. You're just overwhelmed. So some of the causes that we see in burnout, again, it's that prolonged and overwhelming stress. I think it's really important to emphasize the personal nature of burnout and, you know, what I call perceived stress. I think the word perceived really feels like an important clarifier because what feels stressful for one person might not, you know, have the same emotional response that it has for someone else. And I think this is really important. We'll talk a little bit more about this, but it's also the reason why there's really no other human on the planet that can help us kind of navigate our own, you know, they can't tell us what to do because everybody's experience is so personal. So some of the causes that we see in burnout, you know, just parenting in general can be very stressful, right? So we wear many different hats. We try to be different things to different people. I think this can be especially true for working parents, where you're trying to, you know, have one hat on when you go to work and have another hat on when you come home. And I know in my own experience, the significant work-family conflict that I experienced as a nurse, I really found myself trying to work as if I didn't have kids and then parent my kids as if I didn't have a job. So I was trying to do everything perfectly, which isn't possible. And I just really was running myself ragged, trying to be everything to everybody all at once. And then I think you add in, you know, raising a child with a disability, and all of a sudden you are a parent, you are an advocate, right? You are trying to be an expert in what might be a very rare condition that there might not be a lot of experience with, right? You're trying to be so many different things for different people, and it's just truly exhausting. I think another cause of burnout is really sometimes we just want things to be different than they are, right? We have these increased demands and very little control. Sometimes the expectations that we might have don't match our circumstances, right? So we might think that just by, you know, loving our kids and giving them the best care that we can maybe help them get better, or, you know, fix a situation or just make the experience feel different. And sometimes no matter what we do, that just isn't the case. I think there are certain personality traits that maybe predispose some of us to experiencing burnout. So, you know, things that we've been conditioned to feel like we need to be perfect, right? We have this perfectionism going on, people pleasing, imposter syndrome, right? All of those things that we are trying to meet societal expectations, and that can have a real toll on our mental and emotional state as well. And those things are particularly tricky because we're really fighting against ourselves and we can't always see it. And so I think that that's something that's really hard to identify on your own. Mm-hmm. And the last thing is, I mean, again, there's so many things that can cause burnout, but the last thing I wanted to mention is just that uncertainty, right? So uncertainty is actually one of the biggest causes of stress just in general. I think that's why, you know, certain world events, right, like a recession or the pandemic, right? So much of the anxiety and stress that we experienced was caused by the uncertain nature of the event. And so that just takes an incredible toll on us under normal circumstances. And then you add in being the parent of or the caregiver of a child with a disability, and that uncertainty is taken to a whole new level, right? We might have uncertainty around so many aspects of our child's health and our child's care and what does their future look like, and, you know, feeling like we don't have control in the situation. That uncertainty is just an enormous amount of stress that is, you know, everybody experiences, but I think it's especially relevant for anybody that's raising a child with a disability.
Wow. Well, that is really, really helpful. And I think it gives a broader, better idea of what burnout is. I think burnout can be like a hot word and just kind of casually thrown around like, oh, I just feel so burnt out. And I think this really helps clarify what it actually is. And something that I really thought about when you were talking about that is, you know, in regards to parents raising children with disabilities, is that these can compound too. So there's so many of those that you just listed that are all going on at the same time. And yeah, I think that that definitely impacts a lot of us. And I would love to know too, just like, what are some of the signs of burnout and how can it manifest for us?
So I think it's really important to emphasize that everybody's burnout, experience of burnout is so personal. But some of the signs that we can see are, you know, again, it's that mental, physical, and emotional exhaustion. And so in terms of the signs we might see of mental exhaustion, right, we can feel these feelings of guilt or inadequacy. We can have anxiety and just feeling like nothing you do is ever good enough. some of the physical symptoms that we can see, we might have changes to our sleep. So we might be sleeping too much or we might be sleeping too little. We might have changes in our weight, whether that's weight gain or weight loss. We might have, you know, acute illness or chronic illness, headaches, stomach aches, et cetera. Really, so many different manifestations of physical symptoms can be attributed to chronic stress and burnout. And then emotional symptoms, right? We can have extreme emotional swings, mood swings, hypersensitive or feeling short-tempered and impatient. We can also have feelings of numbness and disconnection, so kind of pulling away from everything, having difficulty thinking and processing information because our brains and our nervous systems are just so overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes we might not know if we're having any of these symptoms, but we might be kind of giving into, you know, quote unquote, unhealthy habits that we're using to try and buffer some of these big emotions that we're feeling. So, you know, things like drinking and eating and, you know, doom scrolling and overspending and all these other things that we do to try and just make ourselves feel better because the weight of the chronic stress is too much. And we just want to kind of escape these perceived problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say that if you're not sure if you have burnout or you're just wondering if you're experiencing chronic stress, I would assume that you have it. I think there's no problem with overcaring for yourself, but I think there's a big problem with undercaring for yourself. And I'd love to just take a minute and see, like, what comes up when I say that. I think as caregivers, you know, we're kind of conditioned and rewarded in this, you know, self-sacrificing service to others, right? We should give and give and not need anything in return. You know, and I think that it's unrealistic and frankly a little unfair. But many of us might have a reaction to that, right? We might think that, well, I don't have time to care for myself, or I don't, you know, who has time for that? That's such a luxury to care for yourself, and over caring for myself. Oh my goodness, like there's no way. And, you know, what does that even mean, over caring for yourself, right? Like, how can you care too much about yourself? And, you know, just I think there's so many things that go into that that prevent some of us from even wanting to address this in the first place because we have thoughts about that. And so I just really encourage my clients and anybody that I'm trying to support that just, you know, maybe we just get rid of that language that it's, you know, that it's not okay to take time for ourselves and it's not okay to care for ourselves. And that's, you know, that it's not a selfish thing that we're doing. It's actually probably the most important thing that we can do as caregivers.
Absolutely. That is so true. And I feel like we hear stuff about that all the time of, you know, how important self-care is. But then when you really understand the other side of it, where what is happening when you don't get that self-care, and, you know, listing out the mental symptoms, the physical, emotional, like all of these things, the coping mechanisms, good or bad, like once you can start to understand those more and what not filling your cup is doing, I think it can be really helpful and make it more black and white of like, oh my gosh, like if I were able to invest in, you know, self-care in these ways, that it might be able to help with some of these things that you don't even like. For me personally, when I was reading more about burnout and just chatting with you, I never had the language to put with this. So in my mind, I'm like, well, I'm not having panic attacks. I'm not severely, severely anxious. And I wouldn't say I'm like deeply depressed. But when I had the language to be like, oh my gosh, like I have experienced this before, and I didn't have anything to place with it. And it's kind of this middle ground of like, there's, you know, just so, so, so much going on. And it feels like adding to it is going to be too hard, you know, but when you kind of understand more what is going on behind the scenes, I think that can be really, really helpful. And obviously in regards to raising children with disabilities, I think that adds a whole layer of complexity. So I'm curious, like how do you feel that these go hand in hand?
Yeah, absolutely. And Lexi, I just want to say that's such great awareness about yourself too, right? Like some of the things that you're experiencing that, you know, we always think that, well, someone else has it worse than I do, so I don't have anything to complain about. But, you know, again, these little micro things that we hold on to become really heavy over time. So, you know, I think that that's such great awareness, and it's really important to take that time to understand what our experience is. And, you know, I think parents of or caregivers or anyone, you know, raising a child with a disability, parenting in general is hard. I have two typical kids that are transitioning into becoming teenagers. And, you know, as a parent, I have to shift my identity with every stage of their development, right? So they're, you know, kids are, they go from needing us constantly to maybe needing us not at all. And that can feel really stressful too. And, you know, so just in general, parenting is hard, and it expects so much of us as a human. And then adding in there having a child with a disability, it just takes it to another level. We have so much uncertainty, so much unknown, that in and of itself creates so much stress. We also have just the physical demands of raising a child who might need constant care, right? We all only have 24 hours in a day, whether you have no kids or, you know, one typical child or four kids and three of them have special needs, right? We all get the same amount of time, and we have to determine how to manage that time for all of us. And physical demands, I know I can't just tell my 7-year-old to go get dressed and brush his teeth, right? He is not independent with any of those things. And so even just trying to get out the door in the morning and get to school on time, I have to allow time for all of that and my own energy and chasing him around the house, trying to put his clothes on. He doesn't want to get dressed and he doesn't want to brush his teeth.
I very much relate to this one.
Yeah, right? You know, and I think sometimes their physical safety too, whether that's safety for our child, right? Safety for everyone around them, safety of, you know, our own safety. I mean, I will share my son is not potty trained yet. And, you know, he's getting big. He's 7 now, and he's not always cooperative with things he doesn't want to do. And last summer, we had an experience where I was trying to go in, you know, take him into the bathroom to get him all changed, and he didn't want to go. And he reared back and hit me square in the face with his head really hard, and he broke my nose. And, you know, he's not an aggressive guy. He didn't mean to do that. He didn't mean to hurt me. And it happened, right? And so that, you know, I have a little bit of you know, PTSD from that. And I, you know, I'm very cautious with him now when I'm changing him. And I know that, you know, some families have it so much worse, where there might actually be more aggressive behaviors or more, you know, concerns for physical safety. And so all of those things definitely add up.
Yeah. And it's kind of that part of like living in a heightened state. Like a lot of us, I feel like, live in that heightened, the safety part is so big. And I think we can also get caught in this, especially if there's a lot of medical stuff. Everything feels like an emergency. Everything feels very like, yeah, just intense. And it's really hard to pull yourself out of that. So that's just kind of to validate how I think a lot of us can get to that place.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's just one piece of it. As you mentioned earlier, so many of these things, these experiences compound, right? So, you know, we have the physical concerns and the physical uncertainty, and then we can add in our mental, you know, on the mental demands, right? So our brains really don't like uncertainty. Our brains are wired for survival, and part of our survival is knowing how to prepare for what comes next. So when we don't know what comes next, it creates a lot of stress in our bodies. And so, you know, some of those mental demands can include just ensuring basic needs, right? Food, water, shelter. For kids with disabilities, this can also look like appropriate nutrition sources and appropriate methods of nutrition, you know, whether there's, you know, parenteral nutrition or a G-tube, right? Or just, you know, feeding concerns, things like that. This can look like accessibility issues, whether that's at home or at school. Travel just adds in a whole new layer. Thinking about anticipating all the things, right? Medications. There's just so many mental demands. There can be financial demands. As we know, this can be a significant cause of stress for families with disabilities.
Yeah.
Just, you know, navigating the healthcare system and insurance and Medicaid and whatever other resources we have or don't have, right? Those mental demands just add up all the time. And then again, even just getting through the day. I mean, I think of, you know, sometimes our days feel like I'm walking through a minefield and just the things that I'm trying to do to avoid the meltdowns. So, you know, my son loves a smoothie. So if he sees the blender, he demands a smoothie, whether or not it's actually like a convenient time to make a smoothie, right? So I have to be sure that that's not within his eyesight or I know we're going to have a meltdown. And on the other end of it is he really hates my hairdryer. So, you know, if I want to take a shower and dry my hair and feel like I'm put together for the day, I have to think about, well, what's a good time to do that so that I'm not upsetting him right before we go to school and then his whole day is ruined because he's starting off super dysregulated, right? So just all of those little things that I think sometimes we take them for granted because we just slowly add in those mental demands over time. And pretty soon we find ourselves like the things that our brain is full of we're just trying to get through the day and minimizing as much stress as we can.
Yeah, and I relate with that one so much. Even down to the drying my hair. Can't do that. My daughter happens to hate blenders as well, but but I am so curious, like if we were to write down every single one of those thoughts and those actions, and I'm sure it would be a much longer list than we realize, because on the day to day we've either accepted it or we're just used to it. It's not even a thought, but they're adding up, and that is really interesting. I'm almost curious with myself, like I should do that sometime, just write down all the little things, and that probably would help me give myself a little bit of grace.
Absolutely, yeah, a little bit of validation to feel seen in all the things that your brain has to think about. And then, you know, the last piece of burnout is that emotional exhaustion, right? And the stress that we experience can come from our brains, right? It can come from the physical part of our body. It can come from the mental part of our body. And then it gets stored in our emotional and nervous system in our body. And sometimes we feel anxious without, you know, necessarily having, you know, a quote unquote legitimate reason in that moment to feel anxious. And it's just because all of that energy, all of that stress is stored in our bodies and we experience it. And our brain then goes to work trying to make meaning. So it's almost like it saves it up and then it just comes out maybe at an inopportune time. And our brain feels the anxiety, feels the stress, and goes to work trying to identify what is the stress in that moment, right? And so things that might not feel threatening, you know, on a normal day when we're feeling fine, all of a sudden can feel really activating and triggering for us, right? It's what happens when you know, someone says something and on one day you might perceive it in one way, but on this day you perceive it in such a different way. And it's because our bodies are just constantly looking for the stress, trying to keep us safe, right? And so that uncertainty that we feel in our bodies, it just stores up as emotional stress and it comes out at different times, whether or not we want it to. And that, you know, as we mentioned before, that, you know, feeling hypersensitive, feeling, right, that anxiety all the time that you just can't name. I remember when my first job as a nurse, I was working in the NICU and I loved that job. I learned so much, but it was also an incredibly stressful environment for me to be working in. And I remember, I didn't even have kids at the time, but I would come home and I was so anxious and I was so hypersensitive. And I remember one day my husband just kind of coming up behind me to give me a hug. And I reacted in such a way as if I was being attacked by a bear. I mean, it just was so out of context. And it's because all of that stress just gets stored up in our body and we don't necessarily have control over when it comes out.
Yes, definitely. Well, gosh, thank you for sharing all of that. And I think that really gives context to how this can look. And again, like you've mentioned several times, it can look so different from person to person. But I think a lot of these can have the listeners nodding their head going, oh yeah, me too. I have felt that. I feel that. And yeah, I think that, again, just having you explain it in a way that is relatable, it's that knowledge is power piece. And I think it's so important to kind of understand how we're getting to these places and what all the little components are. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it's so interesting too, because, you know, I've been raising my daughter with a disability for 5 years now, and I feel like I'm very invested in her health and well-being. I try and be intentional about my health and well-being, but I have not learned a lot about this. And gosh, I just wish that, you know, when you're leaving the NICU as a patient, that we were taught about this and, you know, taught about things, what to look out for and all of that. And this kind of leads into, so we identify, oh, I think I am in burnout, or I was, or I could be going in that direction. Okay, so now what do we do about it?
Yeah. So because it's so personal for every individual, I think that awareness piece is the most important thing. Everybody wants to give you advice because they want to help you and they want you to feel better. And their advice is really just their opinion of what they think might help you. But without really understanding your own experience, it's really hard for us to know what's going to help us. We can't just use someone else's 10-step process to managing burnout. And so, you know, that self-awareness is really important. I loved your idea of doing like an inventory of all the mental stress demands that you might experience during the day, just to like see that, right? To get it out of your head and to really validate, these are all the things that I have to think about just in this one experience of my life, right? Like being a parent of a child with a disability is just one aspect of who I am as a human. And it's, right, it can feel all encompassing, but it's also, you know, one component. And so, you know, understanding where you are and honoring that. Something I love to do is, you know, at the end of the day, I love to rate the day from, you know, 0 to 10. So a 0 is like the absolute worst day ever. And a 10 is like the best day ever, right? And, you know, if maybe you give the day a 5, right? Why was it a 5? Well, my brain is going to go right to all the bad things that happened, why it was a 5 and it wasn't a 10, right? We're really good at that. We're really good at identifying all the bad things. And I also like to challenge myself to say, okay, well, it was a 5. Why wasn't it a 2, right? There's a reason why it was a 5 and not a 2 also. And so, you know, understanding that, well, it wasn't a 2 because this, you know, this thing actually went right and this didn't go wrong. And right, just getting in the habit of looking for the things that also go right and feel good. And even if your day was a 2, well, why wasn't it a 1? And if your day was a 1 or a 0, then let's honor that, right? Like, let's just honor that and sit with that. And, you know, if today was a 1 and maybe tomorrow could be a 2, right? That's 100% better. We're moving in the right direction. And I think that's really important to just train our brains to look for the positive, not in an inauthentic, you know, toxic way, but just really to validate the reality, the good and the bad.
I love that.
And I think also having realistic expectations kind of goes along with that awareness piece. You know, as I mentioned, everyone gets 24 hours in a day, no matter what. And what are you trying to do that actually might not be possible within that time frame, right? And what are the realistic expectations? What can I actually accomplish within 24 hours? And what pressures, maybe societal pressures or perfectionist pressures, or, you know, what am I trying to do that maybe I could let go of and create a little more space within my day? The second piece of that, the second tip is really, you know, taking a look at how we're coping with all of the demands. So one thing I love to do, I call it caregiver 911, but it's really just taking a minute and finding a quiet place and taking 9 deep breaths, just really trying to center yourself and just calm your nervous system. And then asking yourself, what is one thing my body needs right now? So that might be a glass of water or a snack, or, you know, I have to pee, or what is just the one thing I need right now in this moment, and do that thing right now. And then what is one promise I can make and keep for myself, whether that is today or this week or this month, right? It could look like, you know, making an appointment for a haircut that I've been putting off, or doing something on my to-do list that's been hanging over my head, or, you know, going for a walk when my partner gets home, or just, you know, whatever the thing is, it's just for myself. It's not for anybody else, right? So that's 9 deep breaths, one thing my body needs right now, and one promise I can make just for myself. And then I think with coping, right, we can really look at coping as either problem-focused coping or emotion-focused coping. And I could talk all day about this, so I'll try to keep it really quick. But first, we want to identify, you know, kind of what the problem is. And is the problem really within your control, right? Is it something that you actually can control? If the answer is yes, then let's focus on the problem, right? Let's create an action plan. Let's make, you know, what are the next 3 things I can do to address this problem? I would say a lot of times the problem that we identify that's causing us so much stress is actually not within our control. And we try so hard to want to control these things, and maybe we can't, right? And so in that case, we really need to focus on emotion-based coping, which is really understanding our relationship to the problem and recognizing that this problem, as I've identified it, might not be within my control, right? So, for example, I really kind of took it personally that my son was not able to potty train yet, right? So I'm still holding out hope. We are still working on it, but it's been 4 years strong and it just isn't happening yet. And for the longest time, I identified the problem as the fact that he wasn't potty trained, right? And I took it really personally and I kind of made it mean something about me as a parent. And that's not something that I can control, truly, no matter how much effort, time, energy I throw at this, you know, quote unquote problem. It's actually not within my control. And once I kind of realized that, I could work on changing my relationship to the problem, right? So is it a problem that he's not potty trained at this point? Thinking about the journey that he's on and all the progress that he's making in so many different areas, maybe this actually isn't a problem right now. And maybe the problem is how I'm feeling about the situation. And that is something that I can work on, that I can control. And for me, that just opened up a lot of space, right? I wasn't fighting with something that I was never going to win. I all of a sudden could have some agency, could have some control, and could create a little bit of certainty for myself, even within this problem that really at one point felt so overwhelming. And then the third thing, when we talk about managing burnout, our personal relationships and our social support is so incredibly powerful. And actually, the literature shows that for caregivers and nurses, a strong sense of social support is one of the most protective factors against burnout. And so, you know, finding that social support that actually fits our situation right now and feels supportive, right? So that also feels like an important clarifier. I'm not talking about maintaining connections that, you know, you feel guilty if you didn't call somebody, or you feel like you have to, right? This person has been your best friend for 15 years and you haven't talked to them because they're in a completely different life situation and now you just feel stressful about it, right? That's not what I mean. Those relationships are important and there's definitely a place in our lives for those, but it's also really important to cultivate those relationships and those support groups that actually feel like you're being held right in this moment. And so I love to think about our lives as a puzzle, right? And we're not trying to fit the puzzle around individual pieces. We're really trying to see how those individual pieces fit into the big puzzle of our life. And sometimes they fit perfectly. And sometimes, you know, the section is really fuzzy and overwhelming right now. So I'm going to set those pieces to the side and focus on a different part of the puzzle right now and see if I can, you know, build up the edges first or build up, you know, whatever section of the puzzle you're kind of working on, but really just noticing how you're feeling about it so that those relationships aren't becoming one more thing that your brain uses against you as proof that you're not good enough and that you can't do anything right, but that those relationships feel really meaningful and supportive. And, you know, also leaving space for new relationships. As I mentioned, you know, we didn't get our son's genetic diagnosis until he was 6. And all of a sudden, you know, I've found, you know, a couple of online, you know, Facebook groups of parents and caregivers and families of children with this diagnosis. And that feels so powerful to me. And I've never met any of these people in person, right? But I feel so seen by their experience. And setting aside 10 minutes, you know, a couple times a week to scroll through that page and see if, you know, I just learned last night a tip that actually might be helpful for my son, that I'm so grateful someone shared their experience. And, you know, is there a way that I can be helpful for someone else? And I didn't have a need for this group a year ago. And all of a sudden, I'm so grateful for them. And sometimes we have to just leave space for those people to come into our lives that we don't know that we need yet.
Yes, I love that so much. And I think that's a big part of what I'm hoping for in this community and doing the podcast, is for more people to be able to find that. But really, I like kind of how you phrased it with, it's finding the people who help you feel seen. And you can feel seen by different people in different stages of your life. And similar to you with like the support groups, I mean, I've kind of gone up and down with when I need them, when they're too much, when it's overwhelming, when it's helpful. And yeah, it really is. It's kind of like a skill to develop finding the right people, maintaining those relationships. But I think it can make all the difference. And I'm really grateful you brought that up, because I do. I think that is such a big part of this.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think another big part of it too is really allowing ourselves to feel supported by those people. Because sometimes we feel like we should be able to do it all ourselves. And it's actually a skill to just allow yourself to feel supported by them, to be carried by them, to feel seen by them.
Yes, to be able to say yes to, can I bring you dinner over, or, you know, the different things. I think it's a natural instinct to be like, no, it's good, I got it. But to learn to be able to accept it, and then also to be able to offer it as well. I think that is just, it is one of the beautiful parts, I think, of raising children with disabilities.
I would totally agree.
All right, Daniela, well, that was all so, so helpful, just to learn more about what burnout is and how it can play out for parents raising children with disabilities in a caregiver role. I just really appreciate you being able to share examples and just make this relatable. I'm really grateful for everything that you had to say, and it's been so eye-opening for me. Like, I think I'm just going to print all of this out that we talked about, bring it to my therapist and be like, okay, I have some work to do. I think I've been experiencing some burnout multiple times. I didn't realize that's where I was at, and it's so much of what I want. I want, you know, just to know things and be informed and then to be able to work on, you know, ways to help and ways to be better parents and caregivers and all that. All right. So where is the best place for people to connect with you if they want to learn more about everything you talked about today, or are interested in setting up an appointment with you for counseling through your coaching practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So my company is called Gravity Coaching. My website is www.gravitycoachingllc.com. And I'm also on Instagram at gravitycoachingllc. I have a weekly newsletter that I send out on Thursday mornings that is called Thriving Thursdays. And it's really, my intention for that is to just be a simple reminder for caregivers and nurses to take a minute for yourself. So I work really hard to make sure that that email doesn't become just one more piece of clutter in your inbox, because nobody needs that.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Well, I'm sure a lot of people will find that really helpful. And thank you again for being here today. You were a wonderful guest, and I think you just offered so much insight and helpful information.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Lexi. I was so honored to be here talking with you today.
Oh, thank you. Well, cool. Well, thank you to everyone who joined in on the episode today. It truly means so much to me. To stay connected, be sure to follow along on Instagram at Disability Parenting Pod. There, I will be sharing lots of updates on future episodes, real and raw posts that are sure to make you feel known. Also, feel free to shoot me an email at disabilityparentingpod@gmail.com if you have any topics you'd like to explore or are interested in being a guest on the show. Again, thank you so much for being a part of the Disability Parenting Podcast community. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes, and remember, your story is our story. Until next time.